My guest today hosted the 40th podcast, well, ever. That's right, the 40th podcast ever. He's also the author of Podcasting for Dummies and Expert Podcasting Practices for Dummies. He also has probably the coolest name I've ever heard. Evo Terra has hosted or co-hosted 19 different podcasts, along with helping produce somewhere in the neighborhood of 700 podcasts. So yeah, he knows a thing or two about this space. His current show, Podcast Pontifications, is a daily show meant for the working podcaster. On it, he doesn't tell you what you should do as a podcaster, but rather what you should think about. And he makes us think in this episode. We talk about suggestions he has for how to use, and more precisely, how not to use the exciting new platform Clubhouse. He also shares why you should have a specific angle for each episode that you produce. He shares his approach to avoiding burnout and when he decides to walk away from one of his shows. We also have a fun dialogue about advertising and the future of this industry. This was such a fun conversation, so let's jump right into it. Evo Terra, welcome to For the Love of Podcast.
Thank you, Billy. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, man. Well, I want to get started. You are a podcast philosopher. You are a professional contrarian. And you're on a mission to make podcasts better.
Yeah.
But more than anything else, you pontificate. In fact, your show, Podcast Pontifications, you do just that. So I want to start there. And I want you to pontificate about this new talk of the town, this darling that everybody's talking about, this drop-in audio app, Clubhouse. How will that impact the podcast space?
Clubhouse is an interesting tool. Now, I should preface what I'm about to say with the fact that I have been on Clubhouse for a grand total of 9 days now. 9 days.
And you're a veteran.
And for a lot of people, it sure seems that way. And I have not been active on Clubhouse every single one of those days. Typically, it's really only the weekend stuff. So everything I'm about to say, take with a grain of salt from somebody who is new. But I like Clubhouse. I mean, I think I have to like Clubhouse, right? As a guy who is an audio first kind of person, and this is the first, well, not necessarily the first, but a social media app, which is audio, not just audio first, but audio only, right? That's new. Right. This audio only aspect is brand new. I mean, you can't DM someone. You can't send text chats in the middle of a conversation. So it is audio only, which that in of itself is intriguing me about the platform. So I dig it. I'm also an ex-radio guy. So I used to be on the radio, and it's fun to be on the radio at 7 o'clock in the night on a Saturday and say, let's open up the phone lines. And people call in. So that same rush happens when you open up your room to other speakers and have them come in. To me, it's kind of a blend between the phone dial-in places, you know, the party lines, a little bit of live radio, and then also conferences where you can bring different people up onto the stage and have them talk. So I'm a big fan of Clubhouse thus far.
How do you see podcasters integrating this into their overall, I'll use the word workflow for lack of a better way of describing, just their overall approach to how they go about it. Now, is it more for marketing and visibility? Is it more for doing podcast-esque shows? Is it for building community? Like, how do you see us using this in the future?
For all of these different types of mediums we have at our disposal, my advice is always do what makes sense for that particular platform and do not try to shoehorn what you're doing in other platforms into a brand new one, because that rarely works out well. I mean, I've seen a lot of people, and I've done it myself, where we try to take our podcast and let's shove that podcast over to YouTube. You know, nobody really wants to listen on YouTube. I know people do listen on YouTube, but that's really not the best use of the platform, right? YouTube gets better when we start making interesting videos. When you make something visually compelling, that's what attracts a YouTube audience. And so I think Clubhouse is going to be the same thing. I think anyone trying to shoehorn their show, because I've seen a lot of podcasters talk about, how do I let Clubhouse become one more distribution outlet for my podcast? And I think that's a giant mistake. I don't think that's where you're going to find the most success. People who use Clubhouse like using Clubhouse because of all of its features. So if you can find a way, podcasters, to incorporate Clubhouse along the way, I think it'll work great. But to me, it's going to be just one more channel that you're creating content for, not one more channel you're distributing your existing content on.
Good distinction, because I'm fascinated by this platform and I'm just like, I'm trying to make sense of it all and where my role is and how I can best tackle it and make the most of it. Mm-hmm. And it sounds to me like what you're saying is, rather than force feed it into my existing show and say, this is another distribution, like literally make content for that platform. Now, with one, am I right in understanding you? And then if that's the case, how should we go about creating? And I know you're new. We're all new. Let's face it. How should we go about curating and creating content for that platform in a meaningful way that will do hopefully what we want it to do, which is to build an audience and, you know, have it be effective?
Absolutely. And you're right. I think you have properly interpreted my advice. That is what I'm saying. Create content that is specific to Clubhouse as you would for any other platform. As far as how you do that, I really think it depends. A couple of ways that come to mind. If you're doing an interview show, then you can use the Clubhouse platform as either in a pre or a post show model where you want to talk with your audience about the things they talked about on your show. Because for as cool as podcasting is, it's never been interactive and it never will be interactive, right? It's one-way communication. It is the show talking to the audience, and the audience does not have a way to talk back on a podcast. Well, Clubhouse gives your audience a way to talk back to the show creators. It'd be great if there's a way to also bring your guest back on and you and the guest perhaps co-host a Clubhouse room together. That's one interesting way. But you could also do a lot of behind the scenes stuff with it as well. Here's all the stuff that you missed. Let me tell you about what happened in my interview. Maybe somebody interviews you about the interview you just had with that guest. And now you let the people on the floor, you let the audience come back in and communicate back. That's just one way that you could do that. For me, I'm still trying to figure out what value it brings to me by using Clubhouse more, because right now, most of the people that are on Clubhouse, there's a lot of conversation about podcasting. And as you properly noted at the beginning of the show, I have a podcast about podcasting. And so talking to other podcasters is a good thing. But right now, it's mostly Clubhouse people who want to be podcasters. So there's a lot of 101 level basic information. And I tend to talk more to the working podcasters who are already in the business and want to do more interesting things. So for me, I'm still struggling with what my approach is going to be. But I think every podcast is going to have that discussion with themselves. What is it about my show or my personality or the type of content that I want to create that works in that truly interactive environment? And how can I somehow merge that together with my podcast so that they feed into one another?
I think that's a really interesting point. And to your show, right? It's so funny too, because, you know, this is a podcast about podcasts. There's no shortage of them today.
Right.
And most of them, they tell you what to do. Your show tells you what to think about. And I really like that distinction. And I really like your approach to the working podcaster, not the newbie, not the rookie, although they can listen and they'll learn, and not necessarily the Joe Rogans, you know, who are on in their Joe Rogan land, but you're talking to people who are making a living podcasting, or at least on the road to making a living podcasting, and you have an angle. And I use that word very specifically. When you do your shows, one of the things that I've noted and you've shared is that you try to have an angle. I really like that approach. And it comes back to planning and understanding what your point of view is. Talk a little bit about why that's so important to you. How long you've been doing that? Has that always been your thing, or is that something that that's evolved as you've evolved?
Well, I'm glad you asked the question, because it certainly is something I try to do. And as you've heard me talk about it on several episodes, you know, there's two things. Well, you have to have more than two things, but at least two things you really should have before you sit down to do your podcast. And that is the topic, but more importantly, the angle. And so often those people don't understand the distinction between those two. There's the thing you're going to talk about, but then there's the where you want someone to go. What is the thing you plan on leaving someone with? And I learned that through a lot of different things. I've been a writer. I've been a published writer. And of course, if you just writing about a topic is great, but you really do have to have an angle. And if you work with any journalist or you pitch to any magazines or any other publications that want your stuff, that's what they're going to want to know. What's your angle? Because anybody could write about how great the pad thai is in Bangkok, but what's the specific angle that you're going for? Because the topic alone isn't enough to get someone interested. You've got to lead the listener to a destination. You've got to know where it's going to be. Now, if you're just doing a how-to show, or if you're teaching the 101 basic stuff, then your angle's almost already baked in. Look, I'm going to show you how to make better SEO with your podcast. It's a terrible idea, but nonetheless, let's just assume that was fine, right? Then it's simply going to be step one, step two, step three, step four. You're leading them through the process. The act of talking through that kind of is your angle. But when you're talking about something more broad than that, then you have to have more than... Well, let me give you an example. So let's say that you're a business owner. All my clients are all business owners, and you have a real estate agency, right? That's your business. You're a realtor and you got all these agents around town. So you could come out and talk about how to buy a house in Arizona, but come on. I mean, who really needs a how to buy a house in Arizona show? No one, right? Anybody wants to buy a house in Arizona, you find a realtor and that's really it. But once you understand your audience, are you trying to talk to home buyers? Are you trying to talk to home sellers? Those are two very different things. And if it's home sellers you're talking to, are you talking to sellers who sell, $150,000 homes or $1.5 million homes? Their needs are going to be quite different. So the audience in itself will help you figure out what your angle is going to be. They might need more or less help than somebody else does. So all those factors coming together, then when you pick a topic and you say buying a home selling condominiums or something like those, you have an angle. You know what direction you're going to take. It's not just how to do things. It's things you want your audience to pick up and carry with them along that journey as they listen.
I love this mindset that you have as you approach your episode. And I want to take it another level. And how does one episode interplay with another? Meaning, and I think you know where I'm going with this, you have your angle for your episode, but you obviously have to bear in mind previous episodes, future episodes, and how they all interrelate.
Right. Yeah, that would be, an arc that you're doing across episodes, right? And of course, if your podcast is episodic in nature, which means there may not be much of a connection beyond the general theme, you don't have to worry so much about an arc. If you're doing a serialized show, which means I'm going to take 6 episodes or 60 episodes, whatever the number is, to tell this story. Now, in that case, everything has to be tightly woven together. I would say in that case, you probably need to sit down and plot out the arc across those episodes. Here are the nuggets I'm going to leave people with along the way. I've done a lot of that on my show, not so much this year or this season, but in prior seasons where I would say, okay, this week I'm going to talk about marketing. Mm-hmm. And these are the 4 things I want to talk about with this week. And so they're all pre-planned out. At least I have the topic and the angle planned out for all 4 of those shows. And I make reference back to on Tuesday, I said this, but on Thursday, I'm going to be talking about this thing here. So you've got to work with that way. I think the answer to, how much do you have to do depends on how connected your content is and how much you want it to be consumed in a linear fashion. Because keep in mind, just because you're publishing an episode today, that doesn't mean that's what your audience is listening to today. They might be listening to an episode you published 2 weeks ago because you put out a show every single day and it takes them a while to catch up. They may choose to skip episodes. You don't know how someone has chosen to listen. They may not. In fact, it's very likely your audience does not listen to every single episode that you put out, nor do they listen all the way through every single episode. People get to make their own choices about this. So be a little wary of doing too much of that interweaving together because you may be referencing things people missed, which might not be a great thing.
As a podcaster, you have many choices, just like your audience has many choices. One of those choices is, what's the length of my show going to be? And so you've arrived with your current show and you've co-hosted and hosted 19 plus shows, plus you've produced hundreds of other shows. So, but where you've landed with Podcast Pontifications is it's a sub 10-minute show, and you do it 4 days a week, and you'll take some breaks here and there. And I actually do want to talk to you about the breaks because I'm super curious about that. But to the point of the length of the show, I subscribe to the same thing you subscribe, which is it should be as short as possible, not a minute longer.
Yep.
I'll admit I don't follow it as best as I as I would like to. Part of the reason why is I'm a conversationalist. Yeah. I love having rich, deep, and frankly, long conversations. And I get it. Like, there is always fluff to cut out. When I interviewed Dave Jackson, that was one of the key takeaways. He's like, you know, people telling their life story, a lot of times it's not really necessary, right? People want more value than that. So I'm curious, for somebody like me or other interview-based shows who don't do a sub 10-minute show, which, by the way, a lot of work goes into your show, right? Because it's a huge amount. And so I don't want people to get the idea that a short show means less work, especially if you're doing it over multiple days.
Yeah.
But for somebody like me who's got a longer show, but I still feel this need to package it as tightly as possible, what advice do you have for me or others?
That's a great topic to bring up. So think of it this way. And we've given all the answers already in here. Let's repackage them together so they make sense. So first off, you have an angle for the episode. You had Dave Jackson, School of Podcasting, dude who's been who has like 19 podcasts currently going on right now, I think. Dave Ho is probably just came up with another one right now as we're talking.
That's right.
Longtime podcaster, Hall of Fame podcaster, Dave Jackson. I'm going to make sure I polish all of his.
Sure. Stuff. Yeah. Might as well.
You had Dave on for a reason. And I'm assuming the title of the episode wasn't my interview with Dave Jackson. It might have been, but I will tell you that if it was, how is that any different than the other 100 times Dave Jackson has been interviewed in the last 12 months? Probably not. So step one is, what's your angle? Why are you bringing this person on? It is totally okay, Billy, and to your listeners, it is totally okay for you to geek out and fanboy and have long, super long conversations with the people, but you should have an angle, the reason you brought them on. And by the way, if the whole reason you brought them on is because they're a big name, it's probably not all that. I need to know what you wanted to talk about. So now when you're in cutting up the audio, when you're in the engineering phase and you're doing the post-production editing on this, now you can be much more discerning. This might have been really cool content for this 5-minute long story, but did it go towards the angle? Does it move the story forward? Did it support what you want to do? You don't have to cut it, but now you can make an easier decision because, like, well, that was cool. It's a little long. I feel like it's too long. I want to cut it out. Cut out all the parts, or start cutting out the parts that didn't fulfill the goal. Like, every time, here's another quick tip. If a guest does go on and on, kind of like I'm going on and on right now, you can cut it, but we replace it with you in 15 seconds summarizing what that guest had to say. If it's interesting, if it's important, but it's not that, if you didn't have to have all the words that are in there, just cut it out. And you rephrase it and then get them talking about the point that really, really drives it home. So refactor the things that they said in your own voice, which will help.
Well, like you, I'm a writer. I went to film school. So I know that you got your start doing reel to reel. I was on a Moviola editing film in film school. So it ages me. But I mean, the point being is, one of the things I learned in film school was kill your babies. And that's just a really unpolite way of saying that you may love what the conversation brought out, but kill it, get rid of it, because it probably doesn't serve the angle, the purpose, or the intention behind whatever it is you're doing, whether it be a movie, a written piece of content, a podcast, what have you. The beauty is, even if you kill it, it could have another life. You could repurpose it. It could be its own standalone video, any number of things. The takeaway that I'm hearing is, think about what your angle is for that particular show and be a little bit bold about removing things that don't serve that angle.
Yeah.
I love that. I highlighted that you've had a lot of shows. You're 300 plus episodes deep with your current show. And speaking of babies, it's going to be kind of hard to pick your baby here, but do you have a show that you're most proud of, or one that you feel really just makes your heart sing more than any others? And if so, why is it? Why do you put that one higher than others? And maybe you don't.
So that's an interesting way to think about that. So like you've said, I've done like 19 different podcasts that I've either been the host or co-host of over the time. I think a couple of things stand out to me as some true favorites of mine. One is an ongoing show that I am no longer the host of, and we left on an amicable terms and a very good term. That is the Bangkok Podcast, which I was the co-host of for 70-ish or so episodes for the time I lived in Bangkok. And when I left to come back to the States, it didn't seem appropriate for me to be the co-host. So we found a replacement who I am also happy to say my new replacement on the Bangkok Podcast is doing a much better job than I was. I think the show is better now not having me on it, which is a weird thing to say. But for that particular show, it works. It works really well. The reason I am most proud of that show is that we brought it back from the dead. The Bangkok Podcast was and still is a show for expats who live in or continue to travel frequently to Bangkok, Thailand, hosted by my good friend, Greg Jorgensen, who moved to Bangkok when he was a fresh-faced 20-something-year-old from Canada, from like northern Canada, and fell in love because probably it wasn't snowing and never left. And so, you know, pushing 20 years later, he's still there. He started the show with another expat named Tony. And after like 6 years of doing the show, which was kind of a free-for-all, let's just have a conversation, Tony left. Moved away. And so the show died. I moved to Bangkok. A chance connection put Greg and I together. It wasn't probably, I think 3 or 4 months went by before I even knew he had this show called the Bangkok Podcast, and the files were still available. His hosting account was still up there. So when he told me that, I said, well, I know a little bit about this podcasting thing. Give me the credentials so I can log in and look. And the show was getting like 4,000 downloads of episodes that were 6 years old every month.
Wow.
So it's like, well, there's a built-in audience here. But I listened to some of the episodes and said, nah, I can't do the formatless thing. I need to do something a little bit more structured in my life. So I brought a plan to him to say, here's how I'd like to structure the podcast. I know it's a little weird for you, but let's give it a shot. And the response was amazing. I mean, it was loved out of the gate. Well, most people loved it. There was a few people that didn't like me very much, but I'm a little bit of a polarizing feature from time to time, and that's okay. And it was wonderful. The community rallied behind it. We quickly got featured by the Apple Podcast team all over again, and it was just great. And again, like I said, I'm very happy to say that show is continuing. It was so fun to take something, reform it, and make it better than it was, and see it live on its own life right now. Probably just the most fulfilling thing I've done in the podcasting space.
Wow, what a great story, man. I love hearing things like that because you're basically taking something that already existed and you're reimagining it. And what you're doing effectively is you're giving new life to something that maybe was on its, even though it had some life still in it, you resuscitated it, you brought it back to life.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably a very fulfilling thing to do. I'll just tell you this, man. I left corporate life relatively recently in 2019. I was a Tesla guy and it was amazing to work for a disruptive company like that. But I've always been a creative spirit. I was a filmmaker prior to getting into corporate life. And so when I found podcasting, I just fell in love. And part of the reason my show is For the Love of Podcast is I've fallen head over heels in love with this medium. And I just feel like I left my career, but I found my calling. And I'm still learning. And the reason why I bring on legends like yourself is just to talk it up and learn and figure out, hey, how do I take this thing that I love and really embrace it with every ounce of my core? But along the way, what I've learned is, man, if I had unlimited time, I would start like 20 different podcasts. That's just how I feel. And I kind of feel like it seems you have a similar type of mentality. It's like you have a lot of creative interests. And so the question I have for you is, how do you, having done 19, and I know you've been a co-host on some and a host on others, how do you ultimately decide when to step aside or step away from a show that you're working on and then start something new? Because you want to see what you're doing currently, you want to see it through, but at the same time, interests change and you might have the desire to start something new. I'm curious what your thought process is on when to say no or to step aside for a little bit on a project.
Well, obviously my approach to that has changed over the years as I become older and wiser, theoretically wiser. But I'm reminded of a conversation I had back in the early days of podcasting because I got started in 2004, had a previous life as doing radio work, and we were able to bring that radio show that we had. We already had an existing fan base, science fiction radio, so sci-fi fans or geeks and hardcore fans, as you know. So we brought them into the podcasting scene pretty quickly, which was great. But right after doing that, we said, oh, our audience seems to like this, and why don't we do more shows? So suddenly it went from one show to hosting three shows, like in a weekend, I think is how quickly that went. And then we started a network to roll other sci-fi podcasters together. Again, these are the very, very, very early days of podcasting. And then a year later, I decided, what if I could convince authors to narrate their books as podcasts? Let's push those out there. We had like 700 different titles of podiobooks.com happening at the time. So I was very busy in the first few years of podcasting, all while also having a full-time job, which was always a challenge. And one of the people I was working with at one time asked me, they said, when are you going to stop doing all of this? Because you're nonstop busy. You've got a kid who's playing hockey, so you're constantly up and down at different hockey rinks. You've got a full-time job. You're managing all of these shows. You're part of this network. When are you going to stop some of this? And I answered her. I said, I'll stop doing it when it's not fun anymore. And the first thing I did, I said, that sounds cool. Let me go register that domain name. So I own funanymore.com.
I love it.
And that's kind of become my mantra. I will continue to do things. And in fact, I looked back and realized that's been kind of my driving factor all over time. Not necessarily fun, but when I can make a meaningful impact, or whatever fun happens to mean to me. But when something ceases to become fun, that's when I start looking for another outlet. And I'm quick to drop them. I'm quick to change up things. Like that, those shows I was doing before, I'm not even associated with those people any longer. And I started phasing myself out early. Look, this show we're doing where we're talking to like science fiction actors is just not fun for me. So I don't want to interview actors anymore, because they're just genuinely not interesting people to me. I like the shows. I'm happy to talk about them afterwards, but I don't find a conversation with an actor to be all that compelling. So I don't want to do that anymore. I had another show, which I brought up. It's called Evo at 11. It was me and my wife and a good friend of ours. I taught the good friend of ours how to do the audio editing and production, because I didn't want to do it. I hosted exactly 100 episodes. And on the 100th episode, we started the show and I did the normal roll into the program. And then I said, this is episode 100. That was fun. Click. And turned it off. My wife didn't know, and neither did the producer knew. Like, what do you mean? I said, no, that's it. 100 shows. That's what I wanted to do. And walked away from it. Probably not the nicest way to let your partners and things do it. So I think that's my driving factor. As long as I'm making an impact, as long as it's still meaningful, and to me, all of that means fun, I'll keep doing it. But the minute it's not, I let it go.
Well, let's face it. We only have so many minutes, hours, days, weeks, months, years that we're on this planet. And if we're not doing something for ourselves, why are we doing
it? I'm with you. Yeah.
Cliff Ravenscraft was a guest, and one of the things he shared is like, if you're starting out, do it as a hobby first. Do it because you want to do it. Do it because it's for you. And that's not to say that the audience isn't important. You shouldn't think about the audience. Like we all know that's important. You got to think about the audience.
Of course.
But it's also got to be meaningful for you. You have to love it. You have to be passionate about it, because otherwise chances of you wanting to do it long-term, they're going to go away anyway. So it's kind of a moot point.
Yeah.
And so part of that is like, how do we do this in a sustainable way? And one of the things is I listened back, and I had the same effect happen when I listened to podcast radio show for Dave Jackson. I just got like, I started binge listening. I started the same thing happen with your shows. They're very bingeable. Like they're short, they're bite-sized. And you just go back and you start listening to them. And towards the end of the year, you had a bunch of guests. But what you did, which I really love, is that you set expectations with your audience. You made a schedule on your terms. And I think what I see a lot of people doing and preaching and saying is you got to be consistent and you got to do it every week and blah, 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 all these things. And all that's great. But at the same time, if you can't do it in a sustainable, healthy way, you're going to burn yourself out. So I'm wondering what your philosophy, as the philosopher, what's your philosophy to taking breaks? And for the audience who maybe is of the mind where they put a lot of pressure on themselves, I know I do. I have two shows that are weekly, and I have a very strict schedule. But I'm not going to lie, I could see burnout being a real thing.
Yeah.
So what advice do you have for us?
Yeah, mental health, our own personal mental health is super key. We can't forget that. And while there are people who are willing to work themselves to the ground, you know, there's a limitation on how much you can do. So I don't want to hit that. That's one thing that's key for me that I've learned in, again, wizened old age, that is I don't want to do that crazy stuff. I agree with you about consistency. It is important to be consistent. If you say you're going to do a weekly show, then you do a weekly show, understanding that sometimes things come up. And if your show is supposed to go out on a certain day and the day you need to do something, your equipment all breaks down. Okay. Your audience will forgive you, right? But what they are less likely to forgive you for is, I just didn't feel it this week. Mm-hmm. Well, why were you waiting the last of the week? Anyhow, you had, what about the other 7 days, right? Are you just this last minute about doing things? That's an expectation with your audience that you have to set properly. I'm also a big fan of breaks. As you know, I plan out 2 different breaks in my production schedule every year. As you know, my show comes out every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. But during the month of June, that's my birthday month, I've just decided I'm taking the entire month of June off. And I won't come back until after the 4th of July holiday. So that's break number one. Break number two, which I call Evo's long winter's nap, which I just came off of, starts November and December, right? Those are holiday months anyhow. We've got things going on. And plus, it's the end of the year. There's end of the year things to do. So that's 2 months. So even though I do a show 4 days a week, no Fridays, even though I do a show 4 days a week, you could think of that, well, that's a whole lot of shows. But that's really a 3-month break built into that. And I give people plenty of warning. I give the audience at least 2 weeks at a minimum of warning on every show. Hey, don't forget, coming up, I'm going to be on break. And as you noticed, I do offer people who are other working podcasters to produce their own pontifications and share it on the show. Basically, to take over the chair for an episode, you know, that goes out usually once a week. I don't keep to the weekly schedule because I don't want to do that. But I am happy to have guest people come on and do their own pontificating to the audience while I'm away. But yes, definitely build in breaks, take them. And even if you feel like you need a break, take it. Just announce it to your audience. Give them as much upfront as you possibly can. And if you can't, okay, but find a way to come back in and say something. Tell them why you're on break. What you'd never want to do is leave your audience wondering why you abandoned them. That's not a good idea.
You're a great role model on that because, as you've said, you've been very intentional with how you create your schedule. And to your point in the beginning is like, if you're waiting till the last minute, the audience is going to feel that, they're going to know that, and it's going to be a bad look.
Yeah.
And so I think the more in front of your schedule you can get to the point where, you know, even a year in advance, like, hey, June, your long winter's nap. And for everyone, it's going to be different, but make sure you televise that and share that ahead of time. I think that's a really powerful insight. I want to shift gears for a moment because I can't not talk about advertising with you, being that it was such an important part of your life for so long. You probably have fond and not so fond memories of being in the advertising space, but I'm going to make it just a little bit different. And I want to talk about it from a perspective of a podcaster, not from a podcaster who wants to read advertisements and get sponsorships. That's all great. But how should a podcaster look at the landscape that exists today and take advantage of, for example, going to Overcast or Castbox and actually taking out advertisements on those types of platforms to elevate the growth of their show or the visibility of their show?
Yeah. That's a great way to look at things. And I haven't talked about that very much. What's the value in you, the podcaster, paying to advertise your show so you can get more people listening? I think it's a great way to do things, but I need to couch this with an understanding that, as you mentioned, I spent the better part of 2 decades running advertising agencies, and I am a firm believer in the fact that advertising is a tax on the unremarkable.
I knew you were going to say that. I have that. That's my next question, which now I'll cross that one off. But yes,
I mean, it really is, and I'm not the one that came up with that. Somebody smarter.
I love that.
Came up with it, but that's really it. I mean, you don't have to pay for advertising if you're making a product that people can't stop talking about. Because we all know that word of mouth is the most important way to do things in podcasting. However, that doesn't mean all advertising money is wasted. That's a rather broad brush I'm painting things with. And remember, I was saying this while I was running advertising agencies. The real model here was not to get the client to stop spending money, but to start doing some really remarkable things, because it's a whole lot easier to get ROI or ROIS, that's return on investment or return on ad spend, if you've got remarkable content you're trying to drive people to. So there was an underlying method for that. But to your question, is it worth it for a podcaster to spend some money to drive audience? Yes, it certainly can be. Not always. Again, go back and look at your content. Is this content remarkable? Is this content where if somebody does listen to it, are they going to stay hooked? Because if not, if it's just, if you're spending money because you want to expose people to bad product they're likely not going to keep listening to, you're just throwing good money after bad. Mm. That's not really a good idea. But I love what services like Castbox offer, where you can buy your way to sponsor, if you will, a particular category inside. Overcast has something similar for that. Now you're talking to the right audience. They listen to the style of podcast you're making at the right time. They've got their podcast app open in front of them. Clearly, they're looking for another show. Putting your content in front of them makes a whole lot of sense. So that can be a good money spend. I'm also a fan of doing episode drops where you coordinate with another podcast. Like you could come to me and say, hey, I know you don't push out an episode on Friday. Can I pay you, Evo, to drop my full episode in your feed to your billions of subscribers? I have a few hundred subscribers of the show so that Gat gets good exposure. That can work really, really well. So yeah, all of these things can work. There are plausible ways to spend money to drive more people to your podcast if your podcast is worth it.
Mm-hmm. The first point that you made was so important, which advertising is a tax on the unremarkable. So start with making the content remarkable, noteworthy, shareable. If you make something that people can't help but to share it with other people, what you've effectively done is you have created something that will allow for word of mouth to let your product, your podcast shine. That's mission number one.
Yeah.
And then to your point, but there are ways in which you can stoke the flames a bit or add to that through means of capitalizing on advertising. Do you have any do's or don'ts or tips for somebody that like, you could easily spend a lot of money and not see the results, but do you have any, as an advertising pro, any suggestions? You mentioned a few places to go, any others that you recommend? And also how to be careful, because I noticed there's a pretty wide gap based on category on what they charge, 1,000 to 300, you know, or 2,000 to 500. You know. So what are the rules of the road that you would recommend somebody being aware of to make sure that they go in with their eyes wide open?
So I think the first thing to keep in mind and refactor your thinking on this one is there's a difference between outputs and outcomes. And we learn this in the advertising space. So advertising is going to drive things like click-throughs and impressions and other things like that, which don't mean anything. There's not a meaningful number. That is truly an output of a campaign. It's like how many times or what's your RPM of your wheel spinning around on your car? That means something, but that's not your intent, right? The intent is to go someplace. How many miles can you get on that particular rotations going on? So understand what outcomes you're looking for. If you're going to spend money, and this is a pretty easy one for podcasters, if you're spending money, then you know you want to get a certain number, not just of downloads, but also a certain number of new subscribers. Are you set up to track that? Do you have a baseline established? What are you doing? Are you trying to drive people to hope to listen to an app? Okay, that's simple. Are you pushing them to a landing page somewhere? If it's a landing page, does that landing page really line up with the business outcomes you're looking for? Have you put proper tracking codes on that landing page so you can at least see how many, this app said I got 315 clicks. How many page views did I get? Did that actually work? And of that, maybe I got 90% of the same. Great. That's not a bad number. How many of those 300 people that clicked through to that page, how many of them sampled a show? How many of them just hovered over the Apple podcast icon? All of those things that you can track, those are very important outputs. You want to get all of those things. But most importantly, you want to know what your outcome is, and you want to make sure you have a way to measure it. Because any advertising you can't measure is probably wasted. You just don't know. And that's a bad thing.
I love that, man. Yeah, it's so true, right? And I think you can't do any kind of money spend blindly without being able to understand, are you benefiting? And speaking of, you talk about page views, so that's a perfect segue. I don't want to not talk about advertising. I also don't want to completely avoid the topic of SEO, but I actually don't want to talk about SEO as much as I want to talk about something that you've shared, which I really like this distinction, and I'm guilty as charged. The difference between in-app episode details and an on-site article.
Yeah.
I think a lot of us, myself included, think we can be excused by just putting in some basic notes into our podcast host platform, and therefore that qualifies as an article.
Yeah.
It most certainly doesn't. And
right.
I know that, yet I don't really take aggressive action. So maybe share a little bit why that's so important and how we should be thinking about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you brought it up, because it's a lot of work, but it is so worth it at the same time, right? And that's also, I appreciate you not using the dreaded words episode notes, or I'm sorry, show notes. Let's call them
right.
Banished it from my lexicon. I forgot what it was called. Yeah, show notes, as we're called them. And, you know, show notes, a paragraph, maybe a couple of bullet points, if that gets distributed, you know, in the app and also to the web page, whatever. That's kind of pointless for a lot of reasons. It's really pointless. So to me, I do work really hard and make a vast distinction between the text that I write that goes in my RSS feed, which ultimately winds up on podcast players, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and now Audible, all those areas. I write something just for that. And the things I'm writing for that are designed for a quick skim. This is what this episode is about. Should I keep, is this one worth listening to? Because I've got 50 other episodes of Evo on Podcast with Pontifications. Is this enough? I've got a clever title up there. I've got a good subtitle, but let me get to the details. What's the lesson he's trying to learn? I also do that in the event that they do want to skip. They can go, oh, that's okay. I think I've got that one. Let's move to the next one. So that's what your in-app episode details are. But those are short. I mean, by definition, they're short. You can put much, much, much longer things in there, but I like to keep it into, you know, a couple scrolls, maybe three, and you're all done. However, on the webpage is for a lot of different people. The in-app episode details are only for people who are subscribing or who have it and are deciding whether or not they want to listen. Mm-hmm. The webpage is all about our friend at Google. The most important listener we all ignore, right? I want Google to look at that web page and say, is this a good web page? Because that's how Google analyzes stuff, as it were a human. Is the content here rich? Is it robust? Are there things that are worthy of us including this in the index? Because we're Google. We've indexed the entire world. There's a lot of content we could put up there. Is this relevant? Should this, how high on the SERP, the search engine result page, should this be? The more content that is better formatted for someone to read through will get Google's attention. Now, that does take a crap ton of time because you have to write it. I mean, I spend a crazy amount of time on my articles. I spend about an hour and a half just writing. Just writing the content, properly formatting it with nice headings and all that to attract the attention. But that when you go to my webpage, it's to the point, or when you're subscribed to the newsletter, you get that as well. You don't have to listen to the show. You do not have to listen to the episode because all the content is right there. And I do that because I want an audience. I don't necessarily want listeners. Listeners are great, don't get me wrong. But I want the audience to be able to consume my content in whatever format they want. So that's written content. That's audio content. It's up to them. But regardless, they're going to have a good experience. They're going to get the value because I spent the time to create good content in both places that is slightly different.
Yes. And so just to make sure this is crystallized here, I'm speaking for myself. We can, and I can, get lazy when it comes to that because, to your point, you spend an hour and a half and it's a 10-minute episode. Yeah. You're spending an hour and a half. If I'm trying to, let's say, create an article for my amazing show with Evo Terra and it's 45 minutes, it's an hour, whatever this ends up being, you know, that's a fair amount of work.
A lot.
And so one of the things that I know you can use at least as a baseline is taking the transcript, which, you know, there's plenty of services out there that offer really easy and seamless transcription,
but
clearly you don't want to just slap a transcript and that's not an article.
Right.
So what is the process from taking, let's just call it the bones of the material, which is the transcript, and then synthesizing that into a really readable and user-friendly on-site article? What ideas or approach do you have to help us there?
I'll tell you how I do it, and then I'll give you a suggestion of how you might do it. Because we're different. Because as you said, my show is less than 10 minutes long. So for me, I take the transcript and I rewrite everything. Every single word gets rewritten, but it's around 1,500 words because in 10 minutes, I say about 1,500 words. So there's not a lot of content removal. from me. Occasionally, if I go over something too long, I'll shorten it down. But by and large, it's about 1,500 words I'm done with. If you take that concept to a 45 minute, that's really long. And I'm not sure anybody wants to. I mean, that's an article from The Atlantic. Goodness, that's a very, very long piece. And while I'm fascinating, I'm not that fascinating to read all of my words. So what I would do in that space is I would take this transcript. I use Descript as my service, but you can use any number of services. I would take that transcript and I would immediately go through and I would highlight the good stuff. I would read it word for word and I would highlight the good stuff these are the nuggets that really need to be pulled out of the show. And I'd look for, I'm just going to say 6. Could be 4, could be 16, I don't care. I'm going to find 6 big nuggets and maybe they're all around the questions that you've asked. Maybe each one of the questions you ask has a really good response from me. And maybe that really good response is only, I don't know, 10 words, 15, 20 words, whatever, that really summarizes it. That's what I would do. And I would discard everything else and just take those points that were really, really good. And that becomes the skeleton, the outline of my document. And then I would fill it back in. I'd go write an intro, which you're going to have to write an intro for this when we're done with this recording anyhow. That could probably just be copied and pasted in. Mm-hmm. And then I would write the connective tissue that goes in between each one of those pieces. So maybe your article comes out to be around 600 to 1500 words, which is a good size for Google. Google likes that number. There's no magic number. But more is typically better than not enough. And that might be enough for you to have a well-read article. But the thing is, think about it from that standpoint. If somebody doesn't have 45 minutes to listen, can they just read that article and get enough? Maybe not the same thing. In fact, definitely not the same thing. But could they get enough? Is that good enough on its own to go, wow, I got some valuable nuggets. I'm going to bookmark that page. Nobody bookmarks pages. Oh, that's the idea. Is it that good? So one more thing before we leave that topic though. That transcription that I said throw away, don't throw it away. You need to post the transcription, the actual transcription, the real words you and I said together on your website, not for SEO purposes. We need to do that because we are good people and we want our content to be reached by as many people as possible, including those who have significant hearing loss and cannot listen. You need to give that to them. Maybe some have to listen, but they want some sort of a clue to follow along. That's also important. Every episode I put out has a transcript. Prior to 2021, I was lazy and just using the machine transcript. Starting this year, every transcript is cleaned up. So it is actually corrected. It's the same. It's the thing that I said. Sure, but if I stumble around for a bit, it never can spell my name right, which is weird. And pontifications is often podcasts on vacation. So it fixes all those little goofy things. So those are all available too. So for me, it's the transcript that gets attached so that those who want the transcript, who need the transcript, have it available too. That's super important.
Yeah, what a great distinction. And I think we've all seen the pitfalls of AI, which as great as it is, it can often create a less than correct representation of your show. So as we wind down here, I want to end with two things. The first thing is you mentioned Descript, which is a fantastic tool. Because you are immersed in this, I want to talk about tools in the future. So we'll pause on the future, but let's just talk about what tools get you most excited right now. Descript is obviously one that I hear over and over and over again, and people's like your face right there says it all. What other tools are getting you excited right now, or kind of a good lead into the future? What other tools do you see that the industry needs that aren't yet here? And I'll leave it sort of open space for you to talk about that.
Sure. As I think I've said on the show a couple of times, I'm convinced that the next wave of podcasters are never going to open up a waveform editor. They're just not going to use a DAW, which old guys like you and I who used to do stuff for the hard way, we see any sort of DAW. Hey, this is fast. I'm way much faster than I'm using a grease pencil and literally cutting tape. But, the new wave isn't going to need to edit the waveform. They're going to edit the words. They're going to create the content. And all that's going to be done by AI in the background. It'll figure out the best place to put that. And we're already seeing some of that, as you mentioned, with Descript right now. I'm also keenly interested in how we can, I call this atomizing of content, which I probably talked about previously. The idea that, right now my show is 9 minutes long and it's contiguous. It's me talking for 9 minutes long, right? Which is fine. But some of the other shows I produce professionally have multiple segments here and there. By atomizing the content, by breaking it up, as opposed to making one big, in your case, 45-minute long audio file, what if you uploaded, I don't know, five different files, each of them at a different length, that the system, the podcast hosting company that does not yet exist in the future used to reassemble that content, allowing you to use the things like dynamic content insertion, forget dynamic ad insertion, dynamic content insertion. If you've got something really relevant to say, wouldn't it be great if that was easy to break into not just this episode, but all of your episodes, anybody downloading them this month? Or if you want to swap out some message you put at the end, and again, you want it for all of your shows, you could do that easily and conveniently. Or if you wanted to push out something special to listeners who are overseas, that as opposed to those who are right next door, or maybe your local audience needs to hear about a meetup event you're going to do as soon as this pandemic is over, but that's not relevant to anybody that's not in LA. Those are all the things that we can do. Right now, as podcasters, we think about podcasting from our show from minute zero, second zero, zero, all the way to the end. But if we break that up and think about how we can assemble content more modularly, that opens up new opportunities for us. So that's going to be cool.
Oh, man. It, not to mention the fact that because of the Internet of Things and the smart speakers that, you know, are pulling content, I mean, who knows where things will end up. Let's pull the X-ray vision out. Let's get out our crystal ball. You talked about dynamic ad insertion, which you had a recent episode about that, which I found it fascinating when you highlighted that Twitter does about $1 billion a quarter and all of podcasting does about $1 billion a year,
which is just
a shocking stat from an advertising spend perspective. And you were advocating for like, hey, we need to be better at creating easier to adopt revenue platform.
Right.
So clearly that's something that I think a lot of people are talking about, whether that be the Spotify's of the world or elsewhere. But curious, what are the other big, big macro things that you've seen happening in the future? Or what do we need to do as podcasters to best future-proof ourselves, especially as independent podcasters, to survive in this new landscape that's quickly evolving?
I think there's a couple things you can do. One is be open. You have to try these new things. You have to do things like Clubhouse. You have to experiment with these new platforms and ask the questions you asked at the beginning of the show, which is, what are the implications for podcasting? What's the implication for me as a podcaster? We have to embrace these things and not run away from them, because we don't know what's going to work and what's not going to work. We don't know what the future of podcasting was. If you would have asked me back in 2004 when I got into podcasting, if this is going to work, I would have said, I don't know, but it's kind of fun. Let's play with it, right? And I'm glad that I did, because, you know, it totally worked out. So I think the biggest thing you can do is be open to what the future may hold, and don't just poo-poo it, because it fundamentally changes your understanding of what podcasting is today. Because for me, it's changed a lot in 16 years. The second thing goes back to what I was talking about originally, or the question prior to this, is future-proofing your content means doing things different than you're doing today. It just means being prepared to take it to the next level. You brought up the idea of smart speakers. How cool would it be if my show, which is 10 minutes long, even though technically you could subscribe to it on a smart speaker, look, nobody wants to listen to 10 minutes of content on a smart speaker. But how cool would it be if the system was smart enough to go, oh, the person requesting podcast pontifications is on a speaker, I'm only going to grab the cold open. Mm-hmm. Because that's what's important right now. And then it says, if you want to listen to more, say yes, and I'll send it to your phone or whatever else. That's the future we're headed to, that where AI and these artificial, forget AI, think about intelligent assistants. So IA on the other side around, where it's going to be able to do more things with us when we shout out voice commands to things. How will your podcast work? If your podcast is monolithic, that's 44 minutes long or whatever the timing is, or 9 minutes long, that's going to be harder for it to work with. So hopefully you've saved off all your old files, all your old raw source files, which I have. So when we have to go back and slice and dice things to make it more approachable, maybe we're already preset for cool stuff like that.
You got to be ready to pivot, be adaptable, and not be rigid. And I think that's true in just about every aspect of life, not least of which is podcasting.
Truly.
I'm so grateful from your I think your first podcast was the 40th podcast ever.
Crazy.
To today. I'm so grateful and humbled that you were gracious enough to spend this hour with me, and excited to get to know you better, and would love to see you on Clubhouse and perhaps riff a bit over there and have some fun. You can find Evo at evoterra.com. That's EVOTERRA.com. He also has a phenomenal service. You can go to podcastlaunch.pro. I've already mentioned it, but I want to say it again. Go check out his podcast, Podcast Pontifications. The website is podcastpontifications.com, but obviously you can find it on all major platforms. He's on Facebook, but most active on Twitter. And if you want to see more of his pontificating, go check out his Twitter, which is EvoTerra. Where else, Evo, would they be able to learn more from you?
You've nailed all the points, man. Those are the places where you can find me, and eventually, you know, on the Clubhouse thing, if that continues to be a big thing.
Absolutely. Like I said, it's been an honor. Thank you, EvoTerra, for being on For the Love of Podcast.
You're welcome, my friend. Cheers.
Well, that's all, folks. I hope you liked this one. And if you did, please share it with someone who you think might appreciate it. Next week, I'm going to do a solo episode where I give some tips on how to use this amazing, absolutely amazing new platform, Clubhouse. If you haven't yet joined that platform, well, what are you waiting for? I hope it's not because you're an Android user and you only will use Android, because frankly, you may be missing the boat. I think they're going to launch Android in a few months, and I would not wait a few months to join Clubhouse. Trust me, and you could thank me later. I've spent a significant amount of time on that platform since joining just 2 weeks ago, and I'm going to share a ton of insights about how to navigate the platform, how to moderate, and how to network to meet people who you can help grow your business and your podcast. So until next time, remember, everything we do it for the love of podcast.